Thank you so much, and I want to, again, thank you all for letting me speak today and apologize for running over. I spoke at the last session over in the other building, but this will be relatively quick. Let me just get the mouse out of the way. So this is work that I did at the University of Missouri, where I got my master's in veterinary public health. So we'll just go right into it. I'm no relationship to disclose. So this is a perfect presentation, foodborne, to follow a waterborne presentation. So toxoplasmosis, it causes or it infects about 60 million people per year. And those that are infected, they do gain immunity after they're exposed. But what's really vital about toxoplasmosis is that it's actually the second leading cause of death and the fourth leading cause of hospitalizations due to foodborne illness. So Toxoplasma gondii is an intracellular protozoa. It's found worldwide and infects a wide range of mammalian host species, so that includes rodents, livestock, and humans. And it harbors mostly in muscle tissue when an individual or an animal, in the case we're going to talk about today, gets infected. And what's important to remember here, too, is that cats are actually the primary and definitive host, but they don't show symptoms. And so that's an important challenge to consider from a surveillance standpoint. And in our study, we didn't look at any cat-goat relationship, but it is important, an important piece. So on this slide, you can see the transmission cycle, and I'm just going to walk you through it. At the top, there's the cat. Again, that's the primary host. Cats become infected or exposed through consumption of contaminated food sources, such as, they're hunting out there. Domestic house cat is out in the backyard hunting wild rodents, and they could ingest it, and then they have that in their system. The toxoplasma agent, it undergoes most of its life cycle inside the cat's digestive tract, not all of it. And then it's excreted as oocytes in the fecal matter. But the oocytes, as I've indicated on this slide, are not immediately infectious. Even though that's true, this is generally a common source of direct exposure for humans. I'm going to talk about foodborne, but it's a common source of direct exposure for humans commonly when people are cleaning their cat's litter boxes, in addition to the foodborne exposure. And then for livestock, they can become exposed to this agent by grazing on contaminated pastures. Perhaps the cat ate that wild rodent and then defecated on the backyard or where the animals are going to be, or also by ingesting contaminated grain sources. And then, we definitely can't forget that this agent has the ability to cross the placenta, and so fetal exposure is another extremely important piece to this picture. This slide just highlights the infections of toxoplasmosis in both goats, and that translates to, other livestock species as well, and humans. So you can see largely in goats, this infection manifests as reproductive issues, largely spontaneous abortions, or just an overall decrease in productivity. And for humans, now although I said before that it causes high rates of death and high rates of hospitalizations, generally in healthy adults, as we might think for other foodborne or waterborne issues, if you generally are healthy and have a competent immune system, you'll be okay. It's where there are immunocompromised individuals, certainly individuals with HIV or AIDS, elderly, children, or the fetal exposure, that's where the big concerns come from. And in respects to fetal exposure, that's going to be really drastic neurological effects. And actually, pregnant women, often the mothers don't experience any symptoms. It's not until the child is born that there are things noted. And if you're familiar at all, in toxoplasmosis, the big thing people always remember is don't clean cat litter boxes when you're pregnant. So that's, if that comes to your mind, that's kind of what we're talking about today. And really, you can, if you do it within the first 24 hours, you should be okay. But maybe you still shouldn't. So in the United States, we really don't have too much information on seroprevalence in toxoplasmosis. And worldwide, there's been a range of studies that have been done looking both in dairy goats and in meat goats. Now today we're going to talk about meat goats. And the prevalence that they show ranges from 5 to 91%. That's a pretty wide range. But that's worldwide, it's due to a variety of factors. One of them includes demographics and geographic location, differences in herd management, diagnostic strategies, and even genetic variants of Toxoplasma gondii. So those are things to consider. Now, in the United States, although most of the data that we do have is on dairy goats, there was a study done in 2012 that showed 53% of the samples, these retail goat meat samples that were tested for the agent, were positive. And what's important about this study is that these were already on the market for human consumption. This was done in 3 northeastern states, and so that's, you know, just a piece there as well. So why am I talking about this? You know, why goats? You know, why do this project? Well, it's going to be for 2 reasons. The first, like I just mentioned, seroprevalence data that we have is relatively scarce. But the second is that the goat industry, particularly the meat goat industry, is emerging. Decades ago, it really wasn't very popular. But soon after that, the meat goat industry came to be recognized as an important and feasible source of income. Goats, compared to, say, cattle, are relatively small. They're easy to feed, easy to care for. They're not picky eaters like sheep. If you're talking about size, you know, why not do sheep? It's a really emerging industry, and you can see, even though the numbers are a little outdated from 2010, there's still roughly 2.67 million goats in the United States currently. And, you know, again, this is important for our industry. And we think that one of the drivers of this emerging industry is the increase in immigrant ethnic populations, as well as health-savvy individuals. And I did a little bit of background research just for fun, since, you know, here, healthography, I was like, okay, well, what about meat goats in New Orleans? Well, or in Louisiana. It turns out that, as you see on this slide, Louisiana does have a meat goat producers association. There are several herds, meat goat herds, that are registered through that. And some of the local restaurants in New Orleans, I can't tell you which ones, but some of them do feature goat meat on their menu. So even here, right where we are for this conference, goat meat is popular, it's growing. So that leads me right into our project. This work was a follow-up of some previous work that was done looking at a different disease in goats. And so the recruitment was done through the Missouri Meat Goat Producers Association. Of the producers that consented to having their herds be a part of this investigation, there were 367 goats that were used in the project. All of them were aged 24 months and older, and we took blood samples, and then that's what we were using for the study. And this is just a picture of the Boer goat. It's a goat from Africa, and it's the most common breed of meat goat that is in the United States. So the samples that we took were processed at the University of Missouri Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. And we used a latex agglutination assay. And I'm kind of going to walk you through what that looks like. So for the results, we looked at the intensity patterns of the agglutination that fell at the base of the well. And you can see our antibody titer level cutoffs is what we determined. But I have this little diagram, and I want to stand out there, but because the mic, I can't. So for a negative result, we saw a clear circular pattern at the base of the well. So we knew it was negative. Now, if a result was positive, and this is just how this particular test runs, we saw a clearly irregular-shaped agglutination pattern that spanned across the base of the well. And depending on what dilution factor that irregulation fell was the titer level that we called it. You know, it's a newish test, so I like to share that with people. So again, you can see our cutoff, and then we calculated some prevalence rates. So here you can see our results. We looked at animal between herd and within herd prevalence. We looked at apparent and true prevalence rates. The true prevalence we calculated using the test's sensitivity and specificity is located on the bottom of the slide. There were 21 positive goats out of the 367 we tested and 10 positive herds of the 24 that we tested. In order to determine if a herd was considered positive, because there are multiple goats per herd, we just did that. If one goat in the herd tested positive, then we called the herd, you know, a potentially positive herd. So at least one of the goats that we tested was carrying it. This just shows the distribution of prevalences at the different titer levels. So you can see 90%, 330 goats, majority of them were true negatives. There were 16 that were considered suspects, and then 21 that were considered true positives based on that titer cutoff point. And then on this slide, you can see this is just a graph of the distribution of seroprevalences across the 24 herds. And the large distribution that you see here is likely because of the range of the number of goats per herd. So some of the goats that we tested were, you know, maybe 3-5 goats per herd, and some of them had more than 50 goats per herd. And so the ones that had 3, you know, to 5, those could be, you know, backyard individuals. Maybe they have one or two every season that they send off to slaughter, but that they are still registered with that organization and consented for the project. So that just is, you know, one of the reasons that you see this distribution here. So just, you know, with any project, there are always some limitations. And, you know, certainly as I just mentioned, there's a small representation of all of the goat herds in Missouri. We didn't test all of the herds, and some of those were on the smaller side. Some of the herds were on the smaller side. The test that we use, this latex agglutination assay, is a relatively new test, and it hasn't been widely used for goats, although, as you saw the numbers, you know, it's a pretty good test. And so the titer cutoff points and the sensitivity and specificity were reported from literature that we're using it in other animals and humans as well. And then, you know, again, we cannot generalize this data. We can show that this is true for the herds we tested in Missouri, but we can't make a statement about the national burden for sure. So then, you know, we're here at a public health conference. What are the implications? Well, this is and could be a foodborne situation. And really an interest that I had in this project was, again, the interface between humans and animals and more of the behavioral piece. And what is it that, you know, and the occupational exposure. So there are some farmers that have these backyard herds. Some are doing home slaughtering. Some don't realize that the disease is carried by cats. And it's a whole, this disease and other infectious diseases, in my mind, it's a big picture issue. And so, you know, that's certainly where the public implications come for not just the producers, but not just the consumers, but also for the producers. And then just in conclusion, you know, this study showed that we do have some goats in the state of Missouri that tested positive for T. gondii, so they are carrying it. However, there's further research that does need to be done. Definitely characterize the risk factors, look at other tests, and finally, just understand the true impact of this infectious disease and other diseases that, you know, are like that at the human-animal interface, their true impact on public health, human and animal side. And that's it. So those are two great questions. The first one was, so what is the reservoir? And that is correct. The reservoir, they are rodents. As far as I know, this is not a vector-borne issue at all. You know, it doesn't cross over those types of disciplines. And as far as the second question was, you know, are these meat goat producers, these associations, are they familiar with it? And, you know, I would say that they should be. If they're not, they fall under, usually under the Department of Agriculture, and so that would be, you know, that's a piece that they should have communications on. But generally, yes, I worked for a long time during my undergraduate. I worked with the Boer goats that we actually had, and this was at the University of Massachusetts, the Boer goats that we had, and also with beef cattle. And, you know, I worked with producers, and they are very intelligent individuals. You know, I mean, maybe we're all from a wide range of areas in the United States, but majority of them knew how important infectious disease were, because a lot of them don't just affect the animals, they don't just infect people, they affect the animals themselves. And that's, you know, that's at the end of the day, it's loss of money for the producers. So I would say yes, they do, and if they don't, they should. Yeah. Sure, yeah. So the question was about being able to test the actual products, not just the, you know, in blood, live animal. And certainly, yes, they can. The study that was done in 2012 tested the meat goat samples. And so what they're doing is looking for presence of the bacteria, not the bacteria, and also looking for the genetic material against the bacteria. So not looking at antibodies, but looking at the presence. So yes. Sure. The question was about studies that have been done that look at the, you know, the human illnesses and the results of that. And yes, there certainly are, more so on the dairy side, because a lot of individuals now are, I mean, I'm sure most of you are familiar with raw milk. So that's not just cow's milk, that's goat's milk. And so there have been some studies. I don't know data off the top of my head for that, but there certainly are studies that have been done. And, you know, for meat, as any foodborne illness, if you cook the meat, you should be fine. But yes, the answer is yes. Yeah.